And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Just want to say that you might want to have a pencil and paper handy, because there could be something you want to write down, some date, sometime, some place, maybe an email address, web page, something you want to check out later on. So have that handy. Let's start off with announcements over in Alameda. On Alameda Creek, there's going to be an Alameda Creek cleanup coming up on Saturday, April 19th. Help the Alameda Creek Alliance clean our Adopt-A-Spot at the bottom of Niles Canyon. They'll be there Saturday, April 19th. We will also be pulling invasive ivy off of the trees in the riparian corridor, cleaning things up, making sure everything looks great. Ralph is going to be leading that. Send an email to ralph@alamedacreek.org for more info. That's Ralph, R-A-L-P-H, at alamedacreek.org. And those folks are doing great stuff over there, getting their salmon and steelhead and trout back up. Here is the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. Late last week, Buffalo Field Campaign patrols saw the first buffalo calf of the season. Mom and calf appear to be doing fine and were spotted along the Madison River in the Hebgen Basin west of Yellowstone National Park. While snow still covers a lot of the ground, spring has truly arrived in the Hebgen Basin. A couple of hundred buffalo have been migrating along the Madison River toward their calving grounds on Horse Butte Peninsula. Save for the dangers of having to cross the highways, all has been blessedly quiet on the western front. Unfortunately, up in the Gardner Basin, hundreds of wild migratory buffalo are still roaming, but not quite so freely, as tolerance is a relative term. Multiple hazing operations have been taking place nearly every day. Late last week, a couple of large-scale hazing operations occurred, one of which on Friday included the third involvement of the Montana Department of Livestock helicopter, eight state and federal agency horsemen, and law enforcement. In these hazes, the government again conducted preemptive strikes aimed to prevent wild buffalo from navigating around the Gardner Basin's buffalo blockade, which we have begun referring to as the basin's Berlin Wall. One such path the buffalo would like to take out of the basin would lead them north to Dome Mountain, a portion of which is buffalo-friendly private land. The other portion is a state wildlife management area, all entirely suitable and appropriate buffalo habitat. Most of the hazing, however, has taken place within the interior of Gardner Basin, almost exclusively from private land due to complaints by a very few anti-buffalo residents. On Friday, a bull buffalo was shot and killed by Bill Hoppy, a Gardner Basin landowner and lessee who has been an infamous player in Montana's war against wild buffalo and wolves. He allegedly claims that the buffalo was threatening his wife. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks took the buffalo's carcass into custody and is currently investigating the incident, not surprisingly. The land Hoppy owns or leases is where most of the hazing operations have been taking place, though the Church Universal and Triumphant has also been requesting that buffalo be removed from portions of their land as well. Interestingly, the Buffalo Field Campaign has noticed that Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has been conducting some hazing operations without the Montana Department of Livestock being present. This is something that has never occurred in years past and is apparently a new development brought about from the Interagency Bison Management Plan's new Gardner Basin habitat expansion. Montana Department of Livestock has certainly been involved in most of the hazing in the past few weeks, but now we are seeing Fish, Wildlife, and Parks conducting hazing without them. When Buffalo Field Campaign asked the Fish, Wildlife, and Park game warden about this, he stated they were responding to private property issues. It is unfair and unsustainable for state or federal tax dollars to be used to harass native wildlife. In Montana and other western states, when a cattle producer's non-native livestock gets into another person's land, the government isn't called to the rescue. The burden is on that landowner to fence out or chase away the cattle. Most property owners in the Gardner Basin cherish living on the edge of Yellowstone National Park, the most uniquely wildlife-rich area of the country, and have learned to coexist with many species of charismatic megafauna, including elk, wolves, grizzly bears, and bison. Learn from the buffalo and learn to give away some of our coveted control. Live a little bit on their terms for a change as they finally gain a little bit of their homeland back. Work for the buffalo as the Buffalo Field Campaign's office coordinator. Buffalo Field Campaign is currently accepting applications for our West Yellowstone office coordinator position. Applicants should be well-organized, personable, and articulate, and should have experience with nonprofit or small business bookkeeping. Familiarity with Microsoft Office is a must, as is knowledge of and passion for wild bison and the work of the Buffalo Field Campaign. For a full job description and information on how to apply, please contact the Buffalo Field Campaign's Executive Director, and you can find out how to do that on their website. The Buffalo Field Campaign's website is www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. You can send them donations at Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758 is the zip code. Any questions, give them a call at 406-646-0070. The webpage again, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And two Santa Barbara County men have been arrested for felony fish theft. Two commercial fishermen were arrested by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife officers early Sunday morning in Santa Barbara Harbor on felony charges of conspiracy and grand theft. John Wilson, 53, of Santa Ynez, and Kai Griffin, 23, of Buellton, both licensed commercial fishermen, are being charged with stealing live rock crabs from fellow commercial fishermen and stealing from commercial fish markets at the commercial dock in the Santa Barbara Harbor. Wildlife officers allege that the pair then sold the crabs along with several other illegally landed species at the Hollywood Farmers Market. Thanks to some good tips from the fishing community and good solid police work, we were able to catch the suspects and stop these illegal sales, said California Department of Fish and Wildlife Lieutenant Wes Boyle. Warden said received reports from commercial fishermen in two Santa Barbara fish markets regarding stolen rock crabs and other associated species. The thefts were said to be occurring in the early morning hours. During the two-month-long investigation, the subjects were observed stealing live rock crabs from receivers in Santa Barbara Harbor and then selling them at the farmers market in Hollywood. The investigation also showed the subjects were selling sea urchins, Kellett's whelks, which were out of season, live rock crabs, and clawed rock crabs that were illegally landed. The suspects are booked into the Santa Barbara County Jail, and charges will be filed by the county district attorney. For more information, go to www.dfg.ca.gov. That's dfg.ca.gov. And a federal court says the Environmental Protection Agency can enforce power plants to cut mercury emissions, in this story by Daryl Fears of the Washington Post. A federal appeals court on Tuesday upheld regulations adopted by the Environmental Protection Agency to cut mercury and other emissions from large power plants, a setback for states and energy trade groups that have been challenging Clean Air Act regulations during the Obama administration. The decision by a three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit means that coal and oil-fired plants must purchase scrubbers and other equipment to prevent 91% of mercury from being released into the air during the burning of coal and oil. When Congress granted EPA the authority to limit emissions of hazardous air pollutants in 1990, lawmakers were more concerned about the impact of human health than costs, Judge Judith W. Rogers wrote in the opinion. Congress was focused on the health hazard of emissions and the slowness of EPA regulations of them, and concluded it was reasonable to make decisions without considering costs, Rogers wrote. There was no congressional requirement for the agency to focus on the economic hit. Other factors weighing against the financial impact of the industry, including health and environmental improvements worth more than $100 billion a year, the EPA said. The American Lung Association claimed it would prevent 11,000 premature deaths, about 5,000 heart attacks, and 130,000 asthma attacks. The court, however, was not in full agreement on the case, although Judge Brett M. Kavanaugh concurred with Rogers and Chief Judge Merrick B. Garland on many points. He dissented on the EPA's failure to consider the cost of its regulation. In my view, he wrote, it is unreasonable for the EPA to exclude consideration of costs in determining what is appropriate to impose significant new regulations on electric utilities, Kavanaugh said. To be sure, the EPA could conclude the benefits outweigh the costs, but the problem here is that the EPA did not even consider the costs, and the costs are huge, $9.6 billion a year according to the EPA's own calculation. Through several pages of the opinion, the judges debated the meaning of the word appropriate, a dictionary was consulted, and in the end, the meaning in relationship to the case was ambiguous. Rogers ended the argument for now. Lawmakers said nothing about considering costs in 1990 revisions to the Clean Air Act. Basically, the petitioners and our dissenting colleagues seek to impose a requirement that Congress did not, she wrote. The National Mining Association President Hal Quinn called the court's decision unfortunate, saying utilities had already spent $100 billion to reduce mercury since 2005. The costs of EPA rules are significant and substantial, he said. Already more than 40,000 megawatts of electricity have been scheduled for closure because of these rules. The Department of Energy forecasts that capacity requirements will reach 60,000 megawatts, enough electricity to power almost 30 million homes. Coal-fired power plants are among the nation's greatest sources of stationary pollution, according to a January 2011 report by the Congressional Research Service. In 2005, they accounted for 70% of the emissions of sulfur dioxide, nearly half the mercury, and 20% of the nitrogen dioxide. Mercury is among the most dangerous of toxins. Studies link it to cancer in adults and neurological disorders in young children. Emissions from mercury utilities fall on land and water, contaminating humans and fish. In water, it develops a more toxic strain called methylmercury, and that concentrates in large predator fish such as tuna. A recent study of small fish off the Maine coast found that their metabolism races as waters warm with the climate, compelling them to eat more in waters contaminated with methylmercury. Smaller fish are then eaten by larger fish up to the very top of the food chain, where methylmercury is concentrated in high doses. One of the predator fish, tuna, often winds up in small cans in kitchen pantries. Mercury from power plants is a leading source of pollution that has led to fish consumption advisories in rivers and streams around the country, as well as in the Chesapeake Bay region, said John Mueller, the Chesapeake Bay Foundation's vice president for litigation. Those contaminated fish put the health of many, including those who fish to feed their families, at risk. And avoid banned rodenticides, use a better mousetrap. Recent news that California will remove second-generation rodenticides from the consumer market was welcome at the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Unfortunately, some consumers concluded that they would soon have no way to keep disease-ridden vermin away from their homes. But that is not the case. The Department of Pesticide Regulation is only restricting consumers' access to rodenticides whose main active ingredients have caused the most illness and death in non-target wildlife and pets. Trained certified applicators will still be able to use the restricted products when necessary to control rodents. The four chemicals subject to new regulations are known to have caused hundreds, probably thousands, of unintended animal deaths. They also poison more than 10,000 American children each year, according to the American Association of Poison Control Centers. The primary cause of these tragedies is misuse by consumers who fail to read and follow the label directions. The best way to keep rodents out of your home, garage, or any building is by blocking all the access points that rats and mice may use to enter, said California Department of Fish and Wildlife environmental scientist Stella McMillan. As it can be as easy as stuffing steel wool into small holes or using a canned foam filler like Great Stuff sold at hardware stores. Remove things that attract animals, especially food sources such as pet foods and children's snacks that are left outside or accessible to rodents indoors. Rodents aren't the only critters food attracts. It also attracts ants, yellow jackets, raccoons, and possums. And if you're in coyote, bear, or cougar country, even more dangerous wild diners. Make sure your garbage is secured in a solid container with a tight lid and remove anything rodents might use for shelter, such as wood piles. You can discourage voles, which like to tunnel in high grass, by keeping your lawn trimmed. Grass cut at 2 inches is tall enough to conserve some soil moisture, but short enough to provide poor shelter for the vole species of California. If you still see evidence of rodents, use traps to eliminate the existing rats and mice in or around your home. Traps pose little danger to humans and pets when placed in the small spaces rodents frequent. They are also effective, inexpensive, and have no harmful side effects other than getting your finger pinched occasionally. There are also some environmentally friendly pest control companies that use exclusion and trapping methods rather than poison to keep your home free of rodents. If you take these actions but still have a rodent problem and feel you must use some kind of poison, please use rodenticide products that do not contain the active ingredients Brodofacum, bromodiolone, diphenhalone, or diphenicum. These are the second-generation anticoagulant rodenticides, known as eschars, that most likely to kill non-target animals. Department of Pesticides Regulations' decision to restrict these four chemicals is based on decades of monitoring studies and mortality incidents. Every monitoring study done in the last 20 years has found widespread exposure of predators and scavengers to eschars, most commonly brodifacoum. We have owls, hawks, foxes, and bobcats dying every year from these materials, McMillan said. Three endangered San Joaquin kit foxes died last year because they were exposed to eschars, and those are just the ones we know of. Since animals usually go somewhere like a den to die alone, these are most likely just the tip of the iceberg. California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Wildlife Investigations Laboratory confirms that these deaths are caused by eschars, but the department can take no further action as long as the product's use by consumers is legal. Typically, these animals are found severely weakened and are taken to wildlife rehabilitators, where they are often bleeding and bruised, only to die shortly thereafter. The Environmental Protection Agency has been working with rodenticide manufacturers to develop safer rodent control products that are effective, affordable, and widely available. Nearly 30 companies that produce or market mouse and rat poison products in the U.S. have adopted the recommended safety standards, including Tomcat products by Bell Laboratories, Assault brand by PM Resources, and Comisco's rodenticides. And for more information, go to www.dfg.ca.gov. Animal Welfare Group plans the largest rescue of Chinese bile bears in this story, reported by Michael Martina, editing by Nick McPhee, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Animal Welfare Group said on Tuesday it will save 130 bears from a bile extraction farm in China, the largest rescue so far in a bid to end a business that has sparked outrage over animal cruelty amid growing opposition. Hong Kong-based Animals Asia said as many as 10,000 bears are held in captivity in China and used for bile extraction, often under poor conditions that cause long-term physical and psychological suffering. The bile, taken repeatedly from incisions in the bear's gall bladders, is used in some Chinese medicines that claim to cure eye and liver ailments. Animals Asia reached a deal with state-owned Flower World to take over its bear bile farm in the southern Guangxi region's capital, Nanning, and to convert it to a sanctuary for Asiatic black bears known as moon bears for the white crescent marking on their chests. The deal was agreed to after company executives said they were losing money on the venture and acknowledged it was time for change. Particularly in the last 2 years, there has been a lot of public discussion about the practice of extracting bear bile from live bears. Most people oppose it, so we consider prospects for the bear bile business to be less and less optimistic, World Flower General Manager Yan Shahong told reporters. Actually, the company has always been investing money but not making any, Yan said. The company had invested about 8 million yuan, $1.3 million, in the farm that had yet to sell bile. The rescue is set to begin in May, and the company stopped extracting bile from the bears 2 years ago. Animals Asia said they had put aside $5 million over the next 3 years to construct and run the sanctuary and retrain staff to care for the bears. Many had been used for their bile, while others had been held for breeding. Wildlife advocates say that while sales of bear bile are legal in some Asian nations, including mainland China and Japan, any trade across borders is prohibited by the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, the CITES Treaty. While the bear trade is robust across Asia, there are indications that attitudes are slowly changing. In 2011, fury among Chinese internet users erupted after news that a Chinese company that extracts bear bile hoped to list on the stock market. The firm eventually withdrew its public listing application, though it didn't give a reason. Joel Robinson, Animals Asia founder and CEO, said many of the rescued bears, which can live as long as 30 years, will likely remain at the sanctuary for the rest of their lives. This negotiation is a result of years of growing awareness and increased opposition, with the bear farmer showing the moral integrity to do the right thing, Robinson said. And booming demand pushes Florida to limit the sea cucumber harvest. Reporting by Zachary Fagason, editing by G. Cross and David Adams, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Florida is capping the number of sea cucumbers that fishermen can pull from state waters after booming Asian demand led to four times as many being harvested in 2013 as compared to previous years. The leathery cylindrical creatures scour ocean floors across the globe, feeding on decaying organic matter. Named for their similarity to the vegetable, the marine mammals are prized in China, sought for everything from an aphrodisiac to a cure for joint pain. The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission said in a statement on Wednesday that from June 1st, daily sea cucumber hauls will be limited to 200 per vessel. The decision was prompted by a booming trade that saw fishermen pull nearly 60,000 of them from the waters surrounding Key West in 2013. Previously, about 16,000 were caught annually, the agency said. The rule showed how the sea cucumber was an important part of the ecosystem and how easily affected they are by over-harvesting, said Fish and Wildlife Commission spokeswoman Amanda Nally. Sea cucumbers are vulnerable to overfishing due to their sedentary nature, which makes them easy to locate and collect. The FWC said in a statement they are also ecologically important as they help cycle nutrients in nutrient-poor tropical reefs and oxygenate sediments. Sea cucumber over-harvesting has destroyed populations in nearly a dozen countries' waters, Nally added, including Costa Rica, India, and Ecuador. In China, sea cucumbers from Japan can sell for up to $5,000 per pound, according to Eric Lee, president of the Florida Sea Cucumber Corporation in the Florida Keys. Sea cucumbers from the Caribbean can fetch between $70 and $150 per pound, though in most parts of the United States they sell for only a dollar, he added. The new rule, along with a recent dive in sea cucumber prices due in part to an austerity drive by China's Premier Xi Jinping, shuttered Florida's sea cucumber located about an hour from Key West. Xi, in mid-2013, implemented budgetary restrictions aimed at curbing the lavish spending habits of government elites to improve the Communist Party's image. Liadol had been planning a major marketing effort to introduce Florida sea cucumbers to China, hoping to sell them for about $200 a pound. "We have to go back and figure out what to do now that we're out of business," he said. You might try whaling. Japanese whaling group intends to resume its hunts in this story reported by Elaine Lees, additional reporting by David Levine in Seattle and Tetsuji Kajimoto in Tokyo, editing by Clarence Fernandez, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. The judgment by the International Court of Justice last month, reported here at Earth First Radio, was a blow to Japan's decades-old scientific whaling in the Southern Ocean, a practice environmentalists condemn, but Tokyo said it would abide by the decision and has canceled the 2014-2015 hunt. But court papers filed in the United States by the Institute for Cetacean Research, which, with Kyoto Senpaku, actually carries out the whaling, said they expect to conduct hunts in future seasons, albeit with a modified program. In the filing in the Seattle court last week, the two groups sought an injunction against Sea Shepherd, an environmental group that has pursued Japanese whaling ships during their Antarctic hunts over the past few years. They noted that the Japanese government had not granted permits for the next season. Plaintiffs expect they will be conducting a Southern Ocean research program for subsequent seasons that would be in accord with the IJC decision, they added, according to the papers, which were obtained by Reuters. An institute spokesman declined to comment, citing the court case and adding that any decisions about whether it would resume whaling would be made by the government. Japan's Chief Cabinet Secretary Yoshihide Suga said on Tuesday, reiterating that the government has yet to make a decision, but it may not take much longer. At the moment, we are carefully analyzing the content of the ruling, Suga told a news conference. After analyzing what the issues are, the government will come up with a policy course. Well, the issues was they were killing whales. Moving on, Japan has long maintained that most whale species are in no danger of extinction, and scientific whaling is necessary to manage what it sees as a marine resource that, after World War II, was an important protein source for an impoverished nation. Japan also conducts separate hunts in the northern Pacific, while its fishermen engage in small-scale coastal whaling. An annual dolphin slaughter has also drawn harsh global criticism. In its ruling, the IJC said no further licenses should be issued for scientific whaling, in which animals are first examined for research purposes before the meat is sold, noting that the research objectives had to be sufficient to justify the lethal sampling. At the time of the court ruling, observers said that one possibility could indeed be for Japan to scale back its whaling plan and submit a new proposal for approval to the IJC. When the IJC verdict was issued, I could see the potential for the Institute for Cetacean Research to rewrite their program and return, Sea Shepherd founder Paul Watson said on the organization's website. My prediction was that they would return for the 2015-2016 season. It seems that this is exactly what they intend to do. But other observers say that with Japan's whaling fleet in need of refurbishing and consumer interest in whale meat low, the court ruling might give the government the chance to abandon an expensive program and to improve its international standing. And a suit has been launched for protection of rare Alaskan wolves. The Alexander Archipelago Wolf, a majestic wild wolf native to Alaska, took a step toward Endangered Species Act protection recently when the Fish and Wildlife Service finally responded to a petition conceding that the shy, persecuted predator may need federal safeguards due to unsustainable logging that has destroyed its habitat in the Tongass National Forest and elsewhere in Southeast Asia. But time is short to save these animals as their habitat falls beneath the axe, so the Center for Biological Diversity, Greenpeace, and the boat company have filed notice to intent to sue the agency if it doesn't speed up its actions to protect the rare, often black-colored gray wolves. The Alexander Archipelago Wolf, one of Alaska's most fascinating species, needs the protection of the Endangered Species Act if it's to have any chance of survival, said Rebecca Noblin, the center's Alaska director. The Endangered Species Act can save these beautiful wolves from reckless logging and hunting. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced every Thursday evening right here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you'd like to listen to a rebroadcast of this Earth First Update, you can tune in tomorrow afternoon right here on Free Radio at 3 p.m. You could also tune to KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Idaho, on Monday nights at 9:30. And they're hopefully going to be bumping up their power here pretty soon. You could also download or listen to a podcast of the Earth First Update at radio4all.net. That's radio, the number 4all.net. And you go there, search for Earth First Update or Earth First Radio News. Don't forget the exclamation point. Also like to mention that radio4all.net is seriously in need of money. They are an archiving and internet place to find all kinds of independently produced radio programs, and unfortunately they ran out of money and went deep in hole, and they need your help. So go to radioforall.net, and when you get there, go to the top of the page and you will find a place where you could make a donation to radioforall.net. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio News and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We want to thank you for listening. Free Radio Santa Cruz website, www.freakradio.org, and donations can be sent to FRSE, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. I want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.